Well, my friend Dr. Paul Pettit serves as Director of Career Services and is an adjunct professor in the Department of EML, PM, and MAW, and he participates in MMA and, and JMA. No, that's my initials. He and his wife, Pamela, and their five adult children live in Rockwall, Texas, where they are actively involved in their local church. Paul's background includes experience as a sportcaster, author, and speaker. His five books include the popular Congratulations, You're a Dad, and the required Foundations of Spiritual Formation. A graduate of the University of Kansas and the Moody Bible Institute's Advanced Studies Program, Paul has also earned a Master of Theology degree and a Doctor of Ministry degree from Dallas Theological Seminary. On July 31st, Paul and Pam became first-time grandparents to the cutest little girl in Texas. And Paul, what's her name?
Nora Faith.
Nora Faith. And would you please welcome me, help me in welcoming Dr. Paul Pettit.
Thank you. Thank you, Pastor Joe, and thank you, Dr. Dorian Coover Cox, and thank you, Patrick, and Jim Hoover for helping me with this PowerPoint. These people that work behind the scenes, think about how we couldn't even have chapel if it wasn't for all the hands and the AV, the people who pray, the people who lead the music, the people who are the chaplain, the people who run the video. So actually, let's take a moment and just thank them for all the... And thank you, Dr. Dorian Coover Cox, for getting me through Hebrew. And all God's people said.
Amen.
And let me show you, since it's Friday, we're going to be talking about cleaning house. That's our topic for today, cleaning house. And just because it's Friday, I'm going to show you the cutest little girl in all of Rockwall, 2.5 months old. You gave me the podium and you gave me the clicker, so I'm going to show a picture of cute little Nora Faith. She is such a joy, and I cannot wait to start teaching her the Greek and Hebrew alphabet as soon as possible. Well, bad news. Sears closed this week. Sears is in bankruptcy. How many of you, maybe 40 years and older, maybe, you remember Sears? Do you remember anybody here? Wow, it was so much fun. You could go into Sears. They had everything. They had the warm nuts roasting under the hot heat lamps. I remember the mall in Topeka, Kansas, White Lakes Mall. You could go into the Sears and get a lawnmower or clothes or sporting goods. You could get lost in Sears. It was so great, but apparently it was too much for people. I mean, look at this poor lady. You have to get out of your car. You have to drive down to Sears. You have to go into Sears. What you want isn't there. They used to give you a little piece of paper, and it was called a rain check. Does anybody remember that? It was so exciting. You would go in and try to buy something. You saw it in their circular. How do you know? You know what a circular is? You would see it in their little newspaper ad, and they would say, you can buy a lawnmower for only $99. And you would go in, and you would get not a lawnmower, but a little piece of paper that was a rain check. And they would say, you can come back later. Well, that didn't work very well. And all of the stores all over America are being shuttered. Why is that? Because Sears, on the outward appearance, looked really good. But internally, all the numbers were wrong. Sales were down. They had huge pensions for their hundreds of thousands of employees. Outwardly, things looked well. But inwardly, problems. And that's what we're talking about today. Does your outward appearance match your inward condition? And my friend Jason has already shouted it out, but there was some competition as well. Walmart and Amazon.com were ahead of the game. Why? They started using technology. They started using the internet. They said, no, don't get out of your house. Don't get out of your car. We'll come to you. You just pick out what you want, and even if you don't like it, we can rebox it and mail it back to us. And now they even have home delivery. Yes, they'll come into your home. Into your home. Now, who has authority to come into your house? Do you give that out lightly? Do you give people authority to come into your home? I'm talking about refrigerator rights. I'm talking about... would you do that? Would you say, you know what? I'm open to that. I'm an early adopter. You know, I don't mind that. If they want to bring the yogurt and the eggs and put them in my fridge, more power to them. But others of you are like, I don't know. You know, it's a little too... I mean, do I want them in my house, like looking around? Do I want them inspecting my house? What if they like go in a different room? Well, let's see by a show of hands. You'll have two options. One, you can say, no. I wouldn't let a Walmart or Amazon delivery driver have the authority to come into my home. Okay, you'll be over here in this camp. But others of you would say, you know what? Fine. I'll give them the key. I'll give them the password. They can come into my house and they can fill up my pantry. Okay, here we go. How many of you are over here saying, I'm not ready yet. I don't think I want it. Come on, raise your hand. Oh, quite a few. How many of you would say, I'm not ready yet for Amazon or Walmart to come into my refrigerator? How many of you are over here? You're like, I don't mind. Come on in, man. There. Come on in. Okay, two people. Okay, two. Well, that's the topic we're looking at today. Would you let someone come in and inspect your house? Would you let someone come in and clean house? Or would you be ashamed? Would you look around and say, oh, I don't want a delivery driver coming in here. It reminds me of that story of Sears. Reminds me of a mom and her daughter. The pastor said he's coming to visit. And this was in the era when pastors would do home visits. And he came into the living room and they sat down to chat and get to know each other. And there was a table there. And he noticed that the big family Bible wasn't there. You know, I'm talking about the big family Bible with all the generations written down in the front. And he said, well, ma'am, I noticed that you don't have the Bible here on your table. And she turned to her daughter and said, oh, hon, run and get the Bible. Run and go get the book that mom so loves. Run and go get the book that mom so loves. And the little girl came running back with the Sears Roebuck catalog. Reminds me of another story of a mom and a daughter. The mom said, let's invite all the pastor and the staff, and let's invite all the family over for a big dinner. And so the big crowd showed up, and the pastor said, ma'am, why don't you lead us in prayer? You know, I always pray, but ma'am, why don't you lead us in prayer? And she said, oh, I would not know what to say. I wouldn't know what to say. And the pastor looked at the little girl and said, well, you pray. And the little girl said, oh, I wouldn't know what to pray, pastor. And the pastor said, well, just pray the prayer that your mom always prays. And the little girl said, dear Lord, why did I invite all of these people? So, question. Does your external appearance match your internal condition? Or are you and I, are we so focused on how do we look? How do we appear to people? How do I come across to people? Because you know, you and I know that principle that man looks on the outward appearance, but what? God looks on the heart. And we're going to ask and answer that question today. Does your activity, does your life that people see line up with what God sees? If you have a copy of the scriptures, turn with me to Mark chapter 11. We're going to be looking at verses 15 to 19. Mark chapter 11. Verses 15 to 19. I need everybody to be able to look at this. Mark 11, let your eyes run down to verse 15. And they came to Jerusalem, and he entered the temple, and he began to cast out those who were buying and selling in the temple. And he overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who were selling doves. And he would not permit anyone to carry goods through the temple. And he began to teach and say to them, is it not written, my house shall be called a house of prayer for all the nations, but you have made it a robber's den. And the chief priests and the scribes, and they heard this, and they began seeking how to destroy him, for they were afraid of him, for all the multitude was astonished at his teaching. In just the few minutes we have, we're going to look at, what did this passage mean then? What did the first hearers, the first readers of Mark, what would they have picked up from, been reminded about by this story? Then we're going to look at, what has this always meant throughout time? What's the timeless truth? What's the principle of this passage that has been carried out throughout time? It was true then, it's true today, it'll be true in the future. What's the theological timeless truth of this passage in Mark? And then we'll apply this for today. What does this mean for us in October of 2018? Well, first, what does it mean then? I think Mark was reminding his readers that faith in Messiah Jesus, not in the temple or the temple rituals, that's what provided access for all people all over the world to encounter God, to have forgiveness of sins. You can think with me how those folks would have gotten so enamored with the temple. They would have said, this is where I go to worship God. We make the pilgrimage to the great city of Jerusalem and we enter into the temple and we deal with the temple staff and the priests and we make sacrifices and this is the way it works for years and years. This is how my father did it and this is how I've done it and this is how my children will do it. You can imagine that and visualize with me that huge temple in Jerusalem. Making pilgrimage, we go up to Jerusalem. Hundreds of feet, square feet, big as 30 to 35 football fields. A huge, massive temple. Here's another artist's rendering. Look at those little people there in the court. You saw the court of the Gentiles on the outside. Then as you went in, the priests would be in the inner part. And the concentric circles, the way it was built for the outsiders, the nations, the ethne, the people from all over the world. Then only the Jewish people. Then only the priests. Then only the high priests. It constricted like that till you went in and in and in and in. And finally into the inner room where God's presence would show and you could make sacrifices and encounter God and get forgiveness of sins. What must it have been like? How many of you have been to Israel? Let me see your hands up real high. You've been to Israel and you've seen parts of the temple. You've seen the way the temple operates. Well, on that side with the roof, the orange Dallas Seminary type roof, those were the porticos. Those were the areas where people would travel as Gentiles, as outsiders, as foreigners. They would come in, and it was called the Royal Stoa. And that was the area where Jesus would often teach. He would set up and teach the disciples or teach anyone who would listen. And you guys know the scriptures. It says people were, what? Amazed by his teaching. It was a place to keep people out of the hot sun. It was a shaded area. But what had happened was it had been turned into a bazaar, a Texas State Fair. It had been turned into a midway. You went in and you had to use the right coins. See, you would bring your Roman coin, but unfortunately the Roman coin had what? An image of the Caesar or the ruler. And we can't have a graven image in the temple, so unfortunately you'll have to use one of our Jewish coins. Oh, and by the way, that'll cost you a little bit. There'll be a little bit of extra fee for you to turn in your Roman coin and get a Jewish coin. You ever left the state fair with a pocket full of coupons? What do I do with these coupons? Well, you know, you can't turn them back in for ice cream or money. Sorry. This is how people felt when they left the temple, sort of ripped off. Hey, did you bring your animal? Yeah, okay, let's look at it. That animal has a little bit of a blemish. Now, we have animals here that are approved animals for sacrifice. Your animal has a little nip in the ear from a wolf. I mean, it was a long journey, and you tried your best, but your animal doesn't measure up. It's not blemish-free. But we have animals for sale. It just works out that way. You're okay, because we have animals for sale. They're a little expensive, but we've checked with the Kohens and the Levies, and they're approved. They're approved. And then you would bump into other people selling and buying religious goods. And in fact, Mark mentions here the doves. What is it about the doves? Mark only mentions that it was for the poor. It was for those who could least afford to buy an animal. At least you could turn in, the temple leader said, two doves. And that would count for forgiveness of sins. And Mark mentions that Jesus pushes out the money changers from the courts, the outer areas where the poor and the people from other nations would come. And you see here in this verse that Jesus quotes from Isaiah 56:7. He says, "Is it not written, 'My house shall be called a house of prayer'?" And that's usually where we leave it. And I teach preaching. And I hear a lot of students preach on this. You should pray more. Pray more. And I like to emphasize this last part because, again, only Mark picks up from 56:7 these final words. "It shall be a house of prayer," and Mark emphasizes what? "For all the nations." That was God's intent. This temple was supposed to be a worldwide refuge for anybody in the world. It wasn't just for the Jewish people. It wasn't just for the Jewish nation. It was a light to the world. The Jewish nation was to be a light to the Gentiles meaning the other nations. So here we see Mark emphasizing the poor, the outsider, the foreigner. And these religious leaders, they had made it a marketplace. They had made it a money-making operation. It was supposed to be based on grace, and the Jewish leaders had made it about law. And on the outside, you would look at it and go, "Wow, what a temple. Wow, look, it's white, gleaming, shining. I could see it for miles away. We're getting close to the temple, son. Let's hurry." But on the inside, corruption, greed, selfishness. What must that have been when Jesus walked in? Can you imagine it? Can you play it in your mind? Let's look at a brief video clip and just imagine what it must have been like when Jesus entered the temple with that thought on his mind that these people are getting ripped off. These people are getting taken advantage of. This is my house. This is to be a house of prayer for all the nations. Wow, you can see there what it must have been like. Who is this man? What's he doing here? And the question that the chief priests and scribes ask, by what authority does this man enter into our house? Some of us wouldn't even give the Amazon delivery driver authority to come into our own house. And the chief priests definitely weren't ready to give this upstart young rabbi authority to overturn and stop all the simple sacrifice. What has this always meant? What's the truth here that we can pull out of this that's timeless? The law, as you know, was our school teacher. It showed us our need for the gospel. It led us to Messiah Jesus. The law wasn't bad. The temple wasn't bad. It just had its time and its season. It was for a purpose. But the season and the time was to lead to Messiah Jesus. And that other principle that goes along with this, without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sin. Yes, they needed to make sacrifices, whether it was a bull or a goat or a pigeon or a dove. There had to be an innocent sacrifice for the forgiveness of our guilty sins. There is only one way of salvation. Sometimes people have accused dispensationalists of many ways of salvation. That's not true. All dispensationalists believe there's only one way for salvation, and that is faith in God, belief in God. The object has changed at times, but Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him as righteousness. Salvation comes from God. That's the point. Salvation is from God. It's not on your looking good or your sounding good or my appearing good. It's an internal condition. Salvation and access to God at this time would no longer be based upon a place. Can you imagine the change in thinking that must have been like? We won't go to Jerusalem anymore. What do you mean? We won't go to the temple. We've always gone to the temple. That's where salvation is encountered, at the temple. And Jesus is saying, I'm doing a new thing. I'm doing a brand new way. It won't be based on a place, and it won't be based on a people. It won't be just about the Jewish nation alone. It won't be about the kings or the prophets. Well, what does this mean for now? Let's bring it into October of 2018. What does this mean for you and I sitting here today in Lamb Auditorium? Make sure you are enjoying your freedom, and make sure your freedom is based only upon the person and the finished work of Messiah Jesus. It's not based on a place. It's not based on a people. It's based on a person. Are you putting up anything over and above the person and the work of Jesus in order to find your freedom and your grace from God? And you would say, no, Pettit, I wouldn't do that. You know, there's nothing that could come between me and my relationship with Jesus. Oh, really? What about some person that you need to forgive? What about some past activity that you were involved in? What about some wrong idea you have about a person or a place? What about your desire to get great grades here? Oh, I know, not very many of you are worried about that. But some of you are. Some of you would say, I really need to get an A. I don't know about the other students, but I've got future plans. And I kind of need to get an A. And some of you grew up with parents, and they said, this is pretty good. 6 A's and 1 B. What happened here with the B? What went wrong? And I'm challenging you, is it Jesus and Jesus alone? Or is it some activity? Is it Jesus and Jesus alone or some place? For example, I know some of you love your college, your Bible college, your vacation home, and you talk about it all the time. I had a staff person one time in the spiritual formation program, and they always talked about this state in the West, I won't name it, but they said, oh, I don't like it here in Dallas. If I could only get home. You see, when I was at home, I was a youth pastor, and things were going really well. And then a few days later, I'm so tired of Dallas and the traffic. And you know, I'm so tired of Dallas and the weather. And I'm so tired of the cement and the traffic and the roads. And if I could just get out of Dallas, and if I could get home. And at one point, I felt like telling him, look, God was at your home, but God is here too. God is in Dallas. This is not some God-forsaken place, even though some of you may think that. And I'm in my career services office sometimes, and people will look at me and like, hey, what's your plans? I don't know, but I just want to get out of Dallas. And then they look at me and say, I mean, no offense. Jesus came into the temple and did 3 things. He cast out, he overturned, and he stopped. Wow. He cast out who? The ones buying and selling. Wait, say that again. Yeah, he cast out the ones buying and selling. Wait, look at it again. Surely it's only the ones selling, right? Like he just cast out the ones selling, right? What does it say? He cast out the ones buying and selling. Why would he be so angry with the ones buying? I thought we were upset with the people who were selling. No, Jesus says, you need to stop too. No longer do you need to buy these animals. No longer do you need to buy these coins. Stop buying. And you, stop selling. I'm instituting a whole new way. The sacrifice will come through me, Messiah, Jesus. Stop buying and selling. And he overturned. He overturned tables and he overturned booths. The tables were for the money changers and the booths were for the ones selling animals. He overturned and he also stopped. He stopped anyone from using the temple as a shortcut. They were profaning something holy. I got to get from Live Oak to the Todd building. I'll just cut through chapel. And Pastor Joe says, hey, no, you won't. Where are you going? Jesus says, why are you just using the temple as a shortcut through Jerusalem? Stop it. And you and I need to do that. Are there things in your life that need to be overturned? Your exalted vision of your future ministry. If I could just get my PhD, if I could just write a book, if I could just serve in this position, if I could just get this staff title. And I'm telling you, you need to overturn that. If I could just get better grades, then God would love me more. If I could just do a better job in ministry, if I could be a better husband, if I could be a better wife, if only I could have children, then God would approve of me. God would love me. And God is saying to us today at the chapel, God is satisfied. God is satisfied. You can't impress him. You can't earn his love. You can't gain his favor. Your activity, your buying and selling, your studying, your ministry efforts, they're not there to impress God. We're there to let God work through us. It's such a privilege to be involved in ministry. Sometimes I look at our old chapel and I go, now that's where we met God. And some of you don't even remember the old Chafer Chapel. Wow, it was so cool. I could go on and on and on for hours. I wish I had time to tell you the amazing things that God did in Chafer Chapel through the years. But you know what? The chapel was just a signpost. There's nothing holy about that chapel. In fact, we're going to get a brand new chapel over here. Amen? We're going to get a brand new chapel. And you know what you're going to do when you come back and visit 10 years from now? You're going to go, pet it, man. This new chapel is amazing. But you're going to take me off to the side and you're going to go, hey, is there any way we could swing through and look at Lamb? I'm going to go, why Lamb? And you're going to go, I used to love Lamb. Lamb Auditorium, I made so many important decisions there. I met God there. I worshiped God there. I loved me some Lamb Auditorium. And I would say, well, have you seen our new chapel? You see, you and I, we do that, don't we? We look at a place like Topeka, Kansas, and we say, if I was only back in Topeka, Kansas, if I was only back at the University of Kansas, that's when God was using me. That's when I was doing effective ministry. When I get back to Topeka, things are going to be different. And God says, I'm here. I'm in Dallas, Texas. I'm in Rockwall, Texas. I'm in your dorm room. And sometimes we hold up a person. We say, well, if I could only get next to that person. Like Dr. Lewis Sperry Chafer, he started this school. Think about that. He planted this seminary. And sometimes I think, if I could only get up next to Lewis Sperry Chafer, if I could only get up next to Dr. Walvoord or Dr. Swindoll or Howard Hendricks or Dorian Coover Cox, if I could get like Dorian Coover Cox, God would use me finally. And Dorian would be the first to tell you, God's going to use you to do a brand new thing. Dr. Chafer maybe is looking down at us right now going, yeah, keep going. Keep going. God used me in my day, and he's using you in your day. In fact, how many of you have ever seen a moving picture of Dr. Lewis Sperry Chafer? Have you ever seen this? You're like, come on, Petta, there's no way. Yeah, a moving picture of Dr. Lewis Sperry Chafer. Let's see if we can make this work. Here goes. Try to push play on that, Stephen. Yeah, there it is. There's Dr. Walvoord in the middle. And this, there he is right there, Dr. Lewis Sperry Chafer. You see him? He started this school. Guess what this was? This was the dedication for Chafer Chapel. Oh, there we go. It's a little music. Too bad we don't have sound. And they were building that structure over there, that Chafer Chapel, and they must have said, this is going to be a magnificent place. And it was for 40, 50 years. God used it. And God met people there. But he meets us here as well. Now, I only wish there was some way we could figure out what this passage is saying, because scholars are unclear. Is Jesus cursing the temple? Is he talking about temple reform? We don't know. There's no real way to know whether God was cursing the temple or God was cleansing the temple or God. If we only had some way to know.
You should look at the context.
What?
Look at the context.
Oh my, huh.
Yeah, you should look at the context. Mark does this a lot. He places a principle in the middle of every story.
Wow. Wow. Well, I mean, let's go fig tree, temple, fig tree. I mean, did that happen on accident? Fig tree, temple, fig tree. And it says Jesus cursed the fig tree from the roots up.
Wow.
Yeah, I think Jesus was cursing the temple. Yeah, Jesus was saying, all leaf and no fruit. All leaf and no fruit. Would he say that about you and me?